Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation, can even be the big debate, but it can only be either of those if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. The number to dial is 44208-601-4555. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or I'll have to move on, because no one will understand either of us. You can SMS the show, and the best of those will come up here on the comment wall if they're good enough. 4478-00-00-8066. Or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. You can even tweet us at comment_presstv. Well, it's the story of the year so far. The country called after the name of its ruling family, Saudi Arabia. I make that point not as a gratuitous jibe, but because it underlines the fundamental problem with Saudi Arabia today. That is that the pool of its leadership can only come from members of the Al Saud family. And those sons of King Abdulaziz are now very old and very frail. And thus, real power is exercised by their sons. And the current king of Saudi Arabia, King Salman, is actually not ruling. Because of his illness, he is suffering from dementia. He cannot be expected to put in the work to be the ruler of a very important Arab and Muslim country. And he isn't. In fact, the person who is running Saudi Arabia is a 30-year-old man, the son of the Saudi king. His name is Mohammed bin Sultan. Now, bin Salman. Now, I know very little about him, and that's partly a problem that I share with most intelligence assessors across the world. What is there to know? He never studied overseas. He never entered politics except as an aide to his own father. And now he's effectively ruling the Saudi kingdom. This is in itself inherently unstable. It's inherently dangerous. But you don't have to take my word for that. The German intelligence agency, the BND, at the end of last year, reported to Angela Merkel that the man who's really running Saudi Arabia was a reckless gambler who could deliver us a more dangerous region and a more dangerous world. Gambler definitely describes this man. I don't know if he's like other members of the Saudi elite and actually likes to gamble in the casinos and the card games of the world. I don't make that accusation against him. But that he is a political gambler is already obvious. And the biggest gamble that he has taken is the one that he took first. And that was to invade their neighbor, Yemen, and become involved in a course of action that might actually have to lead to a full Saudi invasion of Yemen and taking the country over. Because after virtually a year of relentless warfare, the Saudi cause is not an inch further forward than it was at the beginning of that year. Although 10 or 11,000 Yemenis are dead, and most of those are women and children. Now, get that number in your head, because that means that in Yemen, the killing field is even more bloody than the killing field of Gaza in 2014. In fact, nearly triple the number of Yemenis have been massacred by Saudi Arabia and its allies, its coalition, than were killed by Israel in Gaza. Big crime though that was, it was a major story in the world. Yemen is not, for reasons that we will go on to examine in the course of this program. But he's gambling on many other things too. Privatizing national resources that belong to the Saudi people in order to get cash to fill the gap led by a ruinous collapse in the price of oil, which Saudi Arabia itself has largely caused. Privatizing national assets to fill a deficit caused in part by the structural crisis that exists within Saudi Arabia. The need to feed with gold 30,000 Saudi princes, 30,000, presumably 30,000 princesses are being fed, if only to a slightly lesser degree. 60,000 people are sucking the blood and have been decade after decade from the Saudi people's national patrimony. And that structural crisis is reflected in the political field also. It's reflected in the political field because, as I said at the beginning, the Saudi monarchy moves horizontally between the brothers, mainly the Sudairi seven brothers from a Sudairi mother. The throne or the crown gets passed along a group of men who are already far too old to be running countries, especially very important countries in a very precarious place, in a very turbulent, very dangerous part of the world. And because they're so old, and because they are so ill, they have to effectively hand over the reins of power to untried, untested, unqualified, uneducated people. And that's what's happened here. And that has led, and I've got some of the cuttings here in front of me, a whole raft of very distinguished analysts, like Patrick Coburn, for example, in London's Independent newspaper, who describes Prince Mohammed bin Salman as naive, arrogant Saudi prince is playing with fire. And he draws on the BND, the German intelligence agency report, which portrayed Prince Mohammed as a then 29-year-old political gambler who is destabilizing the Arab world through proxy wars in Yemen and Syria. Now, that's not me saying that. It's not even the Independent newspaper saying that. It's Angela Merkel's intelligence agency, written for their boss, the Prime Minister of the most important European country. In Syria, like any gambler, Prince Mohammed has doubled down the bet. The first gamble, having lost, the Syrian regime having survived the onslaught, instead of recognizing the failure of the gamble, the wild, reckless, naive 30-year-old now gambler doubles down. He puts double the stake, and that's what they have done. They have made a coalition. You couldn't make this up, or could you? A coalition that is based on Al-Qaeda. This is supposedly a moderate rebel coalition, but its principle, cutting edge, and the majority of its strength is Al-Qaeda, the Al-Qaeda Jabhat al-Nusra front in Syria. There are one or two other hangers-on, but most of the Saudi money now, and most of the Saudi weaponry, and most of the Saudi-purchased public relations effort is going directly into Al-Qaeda, the very Al-Qaeda which attacked the United States on 9/11, 2001, and cause such carnage for the people of the United States. The United States' main ally, Saudi Arabia, is now pouring billions of dollars into Al-Qaeda coffers. That sounds pretty dangerous to me. So if my question is, could the real Saudi king, and we're saying Prince Mohammed bin Salman is the real Saudi king, could he be the most dangerous man in the world? Well, I can't think of anyone who could rival him for danger. He has involved the poor masses of Saudi Arabia who have no power, no democratic power, no accountability, nothing. He has embroiled them in not one but two inter-Arab wars and is pouring billions of dollars into those wars and is having to sell the national assets of Saudi Arabia in order to pay for it. That sounds pretty dangerous, not just to the world, but to the future of Saudi Arabia itself. It may be that Prince Mohammed bin Salman is the real king of Saudi Arabia, but also the last king of Saudi Arabia, for he's lost every gamble that he's made so far. Is his luck likely to change? I say not. I don't believe that Saudi Arabia will prevail either in its conflict in Yemen, its conflict in Syria, or the third gamble that he has taken. The gamble of beheading the leading Shia cleric in Saudi Arabia and breaking relations, all diplomatic relations, all aviation, all trade, all exchanges of all kinds with the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's a pretty big gambler. If you saw such a man at the race course or at the casino, you would fear for the future of that man's family. You'd say this man is recklessly throwing money at losing bets in every turn of the wheel. That's at least my take. Could the real Saudi king be the most dangerous man in the world? I say yes. Let's hear what Mo in London says. Go ahead, Mo.
Hi, George.
Go on, sir.
There's a very dangerous situation that's taking place in Saudi Arabia. And you and I have discussed it before that that monarchy must be removed. What Salman is doing is he's protecting his father's position as king because there is an internal coup that's taking place in Saudi Arabia. And his father's very weak, so they have to pander to the Wahhabi power base, if you like. And this is what's happening. This is why Salman is now playing a game where he has to invade Yemen at the behest of the Americans, but also he has to keep the Wahhabi power base happy internally. So he's actually protecting his father. This is or his immediate family's power base. And this is exactly what's happening in Saudi Arabia currently.
Yes, the family of Fahd and the family of Abdullah have been removed. They have been pushed aside, and Salman and his family are now, for the moment, in full control of Saudi Arabia. And they're gambling with that power. And it's not working, Mo. I knew King Abdullah quite well, actually. And although I consider the Saudi system to be entirely illegitimate, as a man, as a Muslim, I thought that King Abdullah had some nobility of character. I'm not sure that a 30-year-old man, about whom we know nothing, about whom the Saudi people know nothing, who's scarcely been out of the country, was entirely educated in Riyadh, has been in Riyadh all of his short life so far. It's a big risk, Mo, giving such power to such a young man.
His father had no choice. There is no one else that he can trust with that power. Because otherwise, if his father went outside the immediate family, then there is the risk of him, of Abdullah being removed. But the other danger is that Salman is really one of the Wahhabist supporters or a Wahhabi himself. So this is why you're absolutely right. It makes him the most dangerous person. But you remember, they're under threat. The Saudi monarchy has been under threat for the last 15, 20 years anyway, because of the youth unemployment situation and the attacks against the Shia group in the Qatif and the eastern areas. So the Saudi monarchy has always been in great danger anyway. Then this is why Salman now is trying to consolidate power before his father. You know, his father's not a young man anymore.
No, he's suffering. He's suffering from dementia.
Okay, that's what we've heard. And obviously, at that age, they probably are. But Salman's now trying to grab the power. And you're right; he's too young, 30 years old, defense minister. The man has no experience. So yes, that makes him doubly more dangerous. And this is why Saudi Arabia. You're right. I think the monarchy is now in its last. Days, if you like.
Well, I personally hope so. I'm against monarchies. I can't imagine what the argument for a hereditary ruler is. It's a bit like saying your father was a brain surgeon. Here's the instruments. Perform an operation on somebody's brain. Mo in London, thanks a lot. Dave in Los Angeles is on next. Go ahead, David.
Good morning.
Well, good evening, good morning.
Good evening, yes. I agree. I mean, the Saudi kingdom, it doesn't matter whether they have dementia or Alzheimer's or even if they are 100% sound mind, they still can be dangerous and as dangerous as their supporters goes. Because Saudis do not manufacture any arms to be dangerous for anybody. They are stooges of the Western alliance of US, UK, and Israel, basically, real actors of evil. And as long as they are supported and they're giving the arms, they can harm people. It's just like a kid. You give them a knife, the baby doesn't know it's going to even hurt himself or somebody else. But once you take that knife away, then they won't have the power to be dangerous anymore. I think we are losing the big picture here. We are putting the cart before the horse. Let me tell you one, for example, there is in Quran, if you even read the Quran, if people, I suggest read it as a book. I'm not saying to become a Muslim. Read it as a book. It says, فَبِشَرَ عَبَادَ الَّذِينَ يَتَّعْمَنُونَ قُلْ فِيْتَبَعُونَ أَحْسَنَا. It says humans are commanded by God to listen and use their mind. If it is good, do it. If you don't agree, it is not good, don't do it. There is no force in there. So what we do, as Muslims have duties, I think, to stop this threat. They can do more than these axis of evil, which the Zionists and the Western supporters of the kings of Saudi Arabia. What Muslims should do is, every Muslim country, they need hospital, roads, they need a lot of help. People even have traveled to Iran or to many Muslim countries. The money that they are bringing to Saudi Arabia every year is billions of dollars. And as you said, they are going to be spent in gambling halls or in brothels by the 30,000 princes rather than being spent on the Muslims. They're going to be bought arms from UK, US, and it's going to kill Muslims like in Yemen or in Syria.
But of course, these arms are effectively a form of protection money. They're not really money spent on arms. Saudi Arabia could not possibly use the sheer Everest of weapons that it has bought over the decades from Western countries. This is basically a means of recycling the petrodollars to the people who gave it to the royals in the first place. Thanks, David, for that call. Abdullah is in Somalia. Let's hear from him. Abdullah, welcome.
Hi, George Galloway. I really used to watch your program and your presentation, and I've always been with you in, when it, with regard to the Palestinians and the problems that was going on. But at this time, I fully disagree with you. You just go and demonize the whole royal family of Saudi Arabia. It royal family of Saudi Arabia is like any other royal family. They are not there.
Abdullah, can you speak directly into the mouthpiece? We'll hear you better.
Yes. Royal family of Saudi Arabia is not a democracy.
No, of course. And even they wouldn't pretend Salman, to be that.
Yes, and Mohammed bin Salman is a 30-year-old prince with all these powers. He's got the power because he's the son of the king. That's it, and that is what the royal family is.
But why, Abdullah, why did they give the crown to Salman when he was already ancient and suffering from dementia? This dementia didn't come on yesterday when they made him the king. They must have known.
Yeah, but George,
I mean, I met him about 15 years ago, and I would have said he had dementia then.
Yes, but do you have the medical proof?
No. But his brothers must know that. His family must have known the very weak health that he was suffering. I'm not saying that to humiliate him in any way. The man can't help having dementia, but it's a structural problem. What kind of political system puts a man with dementia on the throne when all he can then do is give the power to his then 29-year-old son? You see the point I'm making,
yes,
Abdullah, about the structural problem?
George, you said he's a Wahhabi. He's a dangerous man. Wahhabi is not a bad thing in Saudi Arabia. The kingdom and the religious group of Sheikh Mohammed Abdul Wahhab, they go hand in hand, and they've been doing that for over 70 years. And the Western world, principally the United States of America, we've been doing business with them.
Okay, Abdullah, it wasn't a great line, but I'm sure it was an important call. I have said many times, let me repeat it, my problem is not that they are Wahhabis. My experience of the Saudi elite in London is that there's nothing very Wahhabi about how they behave when they're here. Ali is in New York. Ali, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Galvi. A pleasure to be with you today. There is no doubt, and I 100% agree that this manic, sarcastic butcher king, whatever you wanted to say, who has slaughtered and shed the blood of innocent Muslims just for nothing, for his enjoyment, is the most dangerous person of this world. And why is that? Because he is sitting on that petrodollar and he's trying to use it to get everything on his side. But thanks God to the world who is awakening. I wanted to go back a little bit, step back and wanted to get a historical perspective of it. You know, what is proven is that this King Salman, who is the king of the Saudi Arabia now, it is proven and it's everywhere that this person was the backbone of all the Takfiri elements in this world. And now he came to power and he wanted to consolidate his power. And he brought, first of all, there is no justification for this illegitimate, rotten egg kings of the Saudi Arabia. But this person was just, sarcastic and manic. He has been brought to the power without any, they did not follow even the rules in the Saudi family, So, and this person has been trying desperately to get the things done on his part. But thanks God, he has lost this so-called card of Harman Shrifan. I wanted to tell you, and I'm proud of telling this, though I wanted to move from my country, Pakistan, which, they refused to help them. Now, the Pakistani government could not say it openly that they cannot, they refuse to help because.
Well, I think that's an important point. But if my analysis is correct, the gambler will double down on his gamble in Yemen. The killing and the expenditure of hundreds of millions of dollars in carrying out that killing has failed. So do they give up in Yemen? Or do they go on? Do they double down? Do they gamble that by putting in more other people's armies, they might be able to win the day? Well, look, I've got to take a short break, just 3 minutes for a news bulletin. God willing, I'll be back. You're watching Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. We're asking the question, could the real Saudi king, by which I mean Prince Mohammed bin Salman, be the most dangerous man in the world? And most dangerous, not just to the region, but to the people of Saudi Arabia. I'm just reading here in The Economist about the reckless gamble of selling the oil resources of Saudi Arabia, the privatization of Saudi Aramco, the crown jewels, if you'll forgive the pun, the patrimony of the entire Saudi people is being privatized by a royal family which has nothing to do with democracy, is accountable to no one, elected by no one, and can do exactly as it pleases. And it pleased them upon the death of King Abdullah to replace him with an 80-year-old king suffering from dementia. Now, the poor man is unable to rule. So what can he do? He can only give the power to his son. Otherwise, he and his whole small family will be out. So he gives it to a man who was then 29 years old. As far as I can see, and I'm going through all the paperwork, hardly ever been out of Riyadh. Educated, brought up, worked, so far as any of the Saudi elite work, always in Riyadh. He knows nothing of the world, nothing of the near world, even less of the far world. And that has led him into three big gamblers. And a reckless gambler, remember, is what the German intelligence agency, BND, told Angela Merkel he was. They were to launch a devastating war on Yemen, to double down on Al-Qaeda in Syria, to radically ramp up, step up the financial, military and public relations support for Al-Qaeda in Syria. And thirdly, by executing, beheading the leading cleric in the Shia population of Saudi Arabia to provoke an existential crisis, not just in his own country, but in a confrontation with Iran, the world's leading Shia power. That's three pretty big gambles to allow a 29-year-old, now 30, to take with the most powerful, wealthiest Arab country. And that's why I'm asking, could he be the most dangerous man in the world? Issa is in London. Let's hear from him. Issa, welcome.
Hi, Galloway. I just wanted to say that, to my understanding, he's the weakest man. Because he's controlled by some other countries, especially by Americans. If Americans don't want, they can't even go to toilet. So they don't have any power. They're just using what wealth they have by the orders of big guys to create problems in the area. Simple as that. They got no power, they're not elected, and they're just some puppet regime from the start.
Well, I'm not entirely sure that you're right, Issa, although I spent a large part of my life saying exactly what you've just said. I think in the current world conditions, with the United States power on the wane, sinking, not fast, yep, but sinking, the client states of the United States, principally Israel and Saudi Arabia, have discovered some freedom of movement, and in both cases are acting, or at least threatening to act, in ways which the United States does not entirely approve of. So I don't think you can say that the gamble in Yemen, the gamble in Syria, the gamble with Iran, the gamble with the Shia population in Saudi Arabia is necessarily coming from him, or coming from the DIA, or the CIA, or the Pentagon, or the State Department. There is some freedom of maneuver opening up in client states like Turkey and Israel and Saudi Arabia, some freedom of maneuver, some independence of movement, and these regimes are, I believe, exercising it. Issa, thanks for the call. I'm going to California where it's warmer. Baz is on the line from there. Go ahead, Baz. Baz, are you there? Unfortunately, California doesn't beckon. We're talking about the new crown prince, effectively the king, 29 when he was appointed, 30 now, with all that power and all that wealth in his hands and the gambles that he's making with it. Robert, the wisest young man in Scotland, he's on the line. I'd put him on the throne. Robert, go ahead.
Thank you, George. It's good to speak to you again.
Welcome.
First of all, I'd like to wish a very belated Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much, Robert. Thank you.
Okay, so this new crown prince of Saudi Arabia, I mean, make no mistake, this man is dangerous. I mean, he's taken a very, very serious gamble with having executed Sheikh al-Nimr and 46 others, and cutting all ties with Iran, which is one of the Middle East or Near East, one of their superpowers, with one of the most well-trained special forces and army in the entire region, and as well as fighting, backing terrorist Salafist groups in Syria and attempting to destabilize the government there, as well as bombing, killing, murdering Yemeni women and children. This crown prince is playing an extremely dangerous game. If he wants massive uprisings in Saudi Arabia, which did happen in the, well, mass riots did happen in areas of Saudi Arabia following Sheikh al-Nimr's death. I should say brutal execution. Riots did happen. The state media obviously will not talk about it because they didn't want their ally to look bad.
No, that's right. You're right. They did happen, Robert. And this Saudi monarchy, with its very narrow base, with no democratic legitimacy, running out of money, privatizing its oil reserves and its oil production in order to raise short-term cash, is now surrounded by hostile, and they chose for them to be hostile neighbors.
Exactly.
Hostility with Iran, hostility with Iraq, hostility with Syria, the Yemen front being completely unpredictable. I mean, either the Saudis could en masse go into Yemen and take it over, or the Yemenis could go in en masse to Saudi Arabia and take it over. It's a very, very dangerous time to put a 30-year-old guy who's never done a job before in charge, no?
Yes, it's very dangerous. The man does not know what he's doing. He doesn't seem like he has any political leadership or any sort of military strategist training whatsoever. Mm. The guy, I mean, if he's willing to gamble with the lives of his own people and the stability of his own nation, and as well the stability of Saudi foreign affairs, then, to be honest, I really think the Saudis should overthrow this guy and the monarchy, which should have happened anyway, and elect someone better to lead their country, no?
Robert, well said. Out of the mouth of babes or teenagers can come wisdom, and Robert in Scotland is the proof of that. Look, these oil states, utterly dependent upon oil, are almost inherently unstable. They have the sheer amount of wealth that they produce produces sclerotic political leadership, weak civil service, weak public sector, weak institutions, and dysfunctional armies. The Saudi Arabian army could not fight its way out of the metaphorical paper bag. If they are going to enter Yemen, they'll have to rent mercenaries from Colombia or elsewhere in order to do it. They do a bit of sword dancing at the national events and so on, but they wouldn't be able to use those swords in real time, in real circumstances. So any of these states is unstable inherently, but one led by a man with dementia, aged 80, who has to give the power to his 30-year-old son, who's never done anything in life, that's a very, very dangerous situation to be in. Jeff is in London. Let's hear from him. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
I just moved down south, actually. That's why I'm not in Lincolnshire.
Okay.
I should just say that I think it's very likely that this Saudi Crown Prince is one of the most dangerous people in the world, because it's not just the horrific war in Yemen, but or indeed the execution of Sheikh Nimr, which I found very saddening, because if you actually look at what Sheikh Nimr preached and advocated, he was no kind of sectarian. He
not
was
at all.
Very.
Not at all.
He wanted to unite Sunni and Shia. He didn't see any reason for people to demonize Saudi Arabia for being Sunni. And I think the leader of Hezbollah and the Islamic leader of Iran actually said that he wasn't executed by Sunnis, he was executed by Saudi extremists. So that's very true. Also, of course, the Hajj tragedy last year, that was also under this new king.
Indeed, another reckless gamble.
A gamble
which led to the deaths of thousands of people who were not just slain, but slandered and uncounted, covered up, the numbers falsified, the people, the victims blamed. You're right, Jeff, another reckless gamble.
Very insulting as well, because if you remember the aftermath of that tragedy, the Saudi authorities actually blamed it on the victims. And they accused the victims of being reckless, the pilgrims who were in Mecca that day. And they've been slow repatriating the bodies, and they even radically understated the death toll.
They willfully falsified it.
They did indeed. And I would just say, I actually saw Newsnight the other night, which isn't always a source of the most accurate information. But
I don't recommend depending on the BBC, Jeff.
No, definitely not. But there was an interesting report, actually, where they talked about what you're talking about, actually, which is the cash-strapped nature of the Saudi economy right now, with the fall in the price of oil.
Which they themselves are responsible for.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But with the fall of the price of oil, they have actually, because they're not getting the income that they used to, they have actually started something of an austerity program at home.
They have, yeah.
And I think it's only a matter of time, really, before normal Saudi citizens start to ask themselves, well, you know, why do we have to have this austerity? And if they ask themselves that question, they might sooner or later ask, why can we have no democracy? Mm-hmm. Why can't we be free? They might even start to ask the question, why are we ruled over by this royal family at all? I mean, this is a holy
land. A royal family of failures who have stolen the patrimony of the people. in the hundreds of billions of dollars. That's just the theft, never mind the largesse in which they wallow in their ordinary lives. Jeff in London, thanks for the call. Nasir is in London too. Let's hear from him. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, good evening, George.
Good evening.
First, you know, I think they are very dangerous, the Saudi government. It's time to get rid of them, I think. The Saudi people should get rid of them, because not only to the Saudi, they are dangerous to the Islam, the teaching of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the creating, if you like, wars all over Middle East. They are involved, not indirectly, directly. We know that they are the tools of the Zionists. There is no democracy in Saudi Arabia. You can talk about them in a negative way for the whole night.
Indeed. There's not only no democracy, Nasir, there's no freedom or liberty of any kind at all. Women can't even drive cars without being arrested and lashed for having done so. Abdul is in London. Let's hear from him. Abdul?
Yeah, hello, George.
Hello, sir. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, see, the issue of a Saudi king, actually, it has been a kind of a pressing issue so far for the Muslim nation to actually look into it. Because what the prince is doing right now is totally not acceptable. Because he's a kind of a naive young man who is not capable to oversee the affair of a very important nation in the Islamic world. So, for him to be given that kind of role to play as far as the region is concerned, we believe that a lot of blunder is going to be committed by him because of his naivety over pressing issues that are supposed to be overseen by him. So due to that, someone who is actually a gambler, just like you said before, cannot do anything good to the society because of his mentality. We only be all about the gamble which he are actually involved in. So we don't expect anything good from him so far. And it is now time for the Muslim communities, the Muslim countries, to actually put heads together and actually see what they can do in order to topple the regime in Saudi Arabia, just as Saudi and his ally are pushing to topple the regime in Syria. Now, when you look at the issue on ground, you will see that the critics which Saudi and his ally are making to the regime in Syria is actually the same thing to what is going on in Saudi Arabia presently. So we are looking forward to see Islamic nations as Iran actually is pushing so far to come together and see what they can do to Saudi regime.
Well, a very powerful argument, Abdul. The Syrian regime didn't call their country Assadia, but the Saudi regime has called the country Saudi Arabia. They have one family rule in Saudi Arabia, although it's a pretty gigantic family, it still is one family rule. They have no democracy, no human rights, no liberty, absolute lack of accountability of the rulers, and they have stolen. They have admitted, Bandar bin Sultan admitted on American television the extent of the grand larceny that the ruling family has been involved in, and expect the people of Arabia to accept it. Whilst austerity, imagine austerity in Saudi Arabia, has begun. Rafiq is in Leicester, still in England. Let's go to him. Rafiq.
Hi, George, how are you?
By the grace of God, I'm good. Nice to hear from you. Go ahead.
George, all the stories I'm listening to, Saudi this, Saudi that, everything. If you remember a few years ago, America were looking for a president or a king who could take over Saudi Arabia, a strong guy, because they all were getting old at 60 and 70 years old. Now they're saying, okay, the young generation's taken over, they're ruthless and everything. But come off it. Let's go backwards a bit. Let's see what happened to Shia and Sunnis before this commotion started in the world. There was no bloodshed. There was no killing. Everybody was enjoying, you know, doing what they want to do. Then what came division? I think all this is, look at it, how much money is America spending, Saudi spending on America, Britain, everywhere, just to get war so they can kill each other and keep Israel safe. It's all game. It's all game. At the end of the day, it's human greed that we're following around. It's nothing to do with Saudi. Saudi said, if America said to Saudi, sit down, Saudi will sit down. Because they're lost.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. I understand why you're saying that, but I don't believe it's as mechanistic as that. I'm not sure that everything Erdogan does is approved of by the United States or coordinated with them. I'm certain that everything Netanyahu does is not coordinated with President Obama. I'm certain that the Saudis are recklessly elbowing their way for some kind of room in order to pursue their take. Saudi Arabia is furious with the United States for making the nuclear deal with Iran. If the Saudis could have stopped the United States making that nuclear deal with Iran, they definitely would have done so. Indeed, WikiLeaks traffic released a year or so ago showed the Saudi rulers describing Iran as the head of the snake that should be cut off, etc. So there are differences between Saudi policy and American policy. It's not quite as mechanistic as you think, Rafiq. But where's it going to end? Let's try and agree on that. Is this gamble going to succeed? Are they going to subdue Yemen? Are they going to overthrow President Assad in Damascus? I think not. Abdul, thanks for the call. Zainab is in Nigeria. Zainab, go ahead.
Thank you, George. Hello, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks, Zainab.
Yeah, we can go over a list of Saudi's wars, but I think everybody knows that Saudi Arabia is digging its own grave by its actions across the Middle East and its policies across the world. Saudi Arabia, a country where women cannot drive, that's the only country in the world where women are not allowed to drive, where there's no freedom of speech, freedom of expression, or any sort of freedom at all. And they hang behind their towels that they put on your head and call for vans and lie about religion. Saudi Arabia, the country that supports terrorism in the world, is like a cancer to the Muslim Ummah, if you get what I mean. And Saudi Arabia is just, we're counting the days to the fall of the empire, really, because there's nothing left for them to do. They've tried everything they can. And this last gamble is just like, they don't even have an ace, obviously, because if you're a gambling man, if you're making a move, you have an ace of your sleeve because you know you're going to win. But Saudi Arabia, there's nothing left for them. And I just pray that very soon we're going to see the end of this tyrannical, vicious regime. And all the so-called allies now are going to come back in a few years and apologize for supporting them, just like Barack Obama and the likes of them are now going back and saying, oh, Saudi Arabia, you're going over your limits. But it's so surprising that these so-called countries who stand for so-called freedom of speech and expression are keeping quiet in light of the barbaric activities in support of terrorism that Saudi Arabia is perpetrating across the Middle East. And I just wonder myself.
Well, Zainab, we'll have to wander on. You can continue the discussion on Twitter at @comment_PressTV. It's been marvellous. Next week, God willing.
Hello, just comment your name and location. Just make sure that your television volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You can do it.